It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Welcome in, welcome back. Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Saturday Suckage. We'll talk NFL football. We'll talk Bears. We'll talk about their quarterback around 12:20 this hour. But first, Ozzie Guillen was on with Mully and Haw. He was talking Clevenger, Eloy, and all things with a team that apparently hates its fans.
Ozzie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Very glad to be back with you guys.
Yeah, we're delighted. And, you know, unfortunately, the story of the day is what happened yesterday. Mike Clevenger is under investigation for domestic abuse and for child abuse. And that really changes sort of the off-season pitching story. The Sox went out and signed Mike Clevenger to a one-year deal, and it's a situation now where you got to wait and let Major League Baseball do its investigation. It just puts a pall over the season in a way.
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you, it's very sad to hear that, very complicated subject, very tough to talk about it, because when the Major League Baseball do an investigation, that means this is true. They're not going to waste time in something they know they can see what's going on. Seems like it's had been doing, you know, had been a few years with him. I just read a couple of tweets and I just read a couple of things, what you say. We have to wait and see if this is true. But obviously, is it true or not? You know, I mean, we have Bauer. They got, you know, we had a Bauer this example. What they did to him, all the song, you find out he wasn't not guilty and still have problems. It's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem. I think the White Sox had to be ready to plan B without him, because I think Major League Baseball is going to punish him. And the way they're punishing people doing those kind of things, it's not the easiest one to escape. And I'm pretty sure the White Sox right now, they have to be in plan B. Something you don't want to hear about. It. Something you don't want to be part of. It. Something you know. I mean, you're a human being. You're married. Nowadays, I have two little granddaughters. I don't know exactly how my reaction is going to be. Is that happened to my granddaughters? Everything's going to be negative for the White Sox and obviously for Clevenger and his family. Something's been going on for a couple of years. We just find out a couple of days ago, and I'm very glad. I'm sad because I'm glad because they find that right before spring training, and I'm very sad because this kid. I'm not going to talk about him helping the White Sox. Talk about how about him about his life off the field. He might can't play anymore. You know, it's just so many negative stuff waiting for him. It's just sad stuff to be watching.
Ozzie, it's great to talk to you again, and a belated happy birthday from over the
weekend. Thank you.
So I think that when you look at your experience as a manager, and maybe even in the winter leagues as an executive and a manager, have you dealt with situations like this before that are very delicate? And if you have, based on that experience, what would you tell the White Sox to do next? How important is it for them to step out and to make somebody available just to reassure people that this isn't acceptable behavior and that they do have a plan, even though it might not be plan A, but they are going to respond to this?
It's kind of hard because White Sox put themselves in a situation they got to answer a question they should. I have the same problem with Vasquez. I don't know if you remember this kid. I know you guys see it on TV a lot. He just beat the crap out of his wife or his girlfriend in the minor league system. He was playing winter league in my ball club. And, you know, the first thing about it, well, you know, you're going to play winter league, not too many people worry or care about it. But in the meanwhile, the owner and the general manager asked me about it. I said, you know what? I really don't have anything to it. I don't think you should be dealing with in Venezuela with that very short history. I said, you know, I think he should be out for at least a year. It was out at least for a year, and now still he go back to play. But you talk about winter league, you talk about another country. That happened here in the United States. This kid couldn't play anymore here. This kid is having very hard time playing, I think, in Mexico because the league is had to be allowed with the Major League Baseball. And he put himself in a trap there. That happened to me. I said, you know what? I don't think this kid, and I love this kid. I know this kid for a long time. I said, don't put him in the spot like he had to answer questions everywhere he go. And that's what I say, you know, it's sad to see that, but I think the White Sox had to be ready because I don't think he's going to be in the ball club for different reasons, or to at least make things clear. But Bauer's stuff was clear. You know, I mean, I don't know what they did. I don't care. But it was there, and they're still punishing him big time. And I asked a couple of people, say, hey, the White Sox should sign Bauer. And they were like, you crazy? Well, yes, I was. But I think Bauer's arm is a lot of things to do. But they say no guilty. And every time move on, the Major League Baseball is still punishing him. And I expect almost similar punishment to Clevinger than Bauer did.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see him as a White Sox player. Ozzy, I don't know if you followed this story with Aloy coming out and talking about now being a right fielder. It's kind of amazing. You know, they kind of moved him to DH, and you felt good about him as a DH. They go out, and they get a left fielder, and now you hear from Aloy, I think it was 2 days ago, where he says that, you know, he still believes he's an outfielder. He came and played DH basically because of injury. And, you know, his goal is to be the right fielder now, which I just think is kind of crazy just because I don't think he has the arm strength to be a right fielder. I don't know that you want to see him in the outfield. And, you know, they're just getting going. They haven't even gotten to spring training yet, but did no one tell him that they're hoping he will be the DH and that that's his position? And what's wrong with telling him that?
You know, I'll be honest, I was laughing. I respect his opinion. I do, because still young. You don't want to have the DH guy for the rest of his career. But then the value when you play the field is obviously a little bit more money and more value for the ball club. But I think the White Sox should just stop and say, you know what, kid, you got to be the DH. This soap opera has been on and on for the last 3 years. When you say you want to play one thing, you know, I want to play two. I want to play right now. I'm 59 years old. I want to play right now. So I can. You know what I mean? I had the same problem when I went to the Marlins with Ramirez. It was a shortstop. They signed Reyes, and I think in my house back in Venezuela, all of a sudden I had a phone call for Ramirez. Hey, I'm not gonna be the shortstop. Blah blah blah. Now it take me like half an hour to convince them. Reyes coming in. Wow, Reyes supposed to be blah blah. You know what I mean? But okay, I'm gonna be the third base. Next 2 days later, maybe got a couple of drinks with a friend. I'm not gonna play third base. I'm the shortstop. I said, well, not talk to me, talk to the owners, talk to the people out there. I don't care. Then finally, yeah. I finally I got tired. Hanley Ramirez, yeah. Finally, I got tired. I said, listen, kid, let me tell you one thing. You don't know me. You're going to be on third base or you're going to be in Dominican Republic. That's easy. That's easy. I'm tired. Said, you know you're going to be the third baseman. Quit playing games, kids game. If you not play good third baseman, I will blame myself. Don't put any pressure. You're not a good fielder. You're a good hitter. You're worried about hits. I went through everything. I go back to a spring training. I sit next to him and say, listen, you're going to be the third baseman, and you're not going to play anywhere else. That's it. The day you don't want to play third baseman, you let me know you're going to be in the bench with me. That's easy as that. And besides that, every time Hanley got four hits, love third base. Oh, love it. Oh, I love third base. All the song, Hanley's 0 for 4. And I hate third base. I can't hit because I'm playing third base. I really got tired of that. And I think you have to be careful about it. It's Eloy Jimenez, it was Andrew Jones. I like, yes, sir, you're right. But it's not. And to me, it's easier to play left field than right field, especially when you play left field all your life. And I hope somebody has some guts in the White Sox organization. If they have some, to tell him before spring training, got to give him a call. And I think they did. I don't know. I hope it did. I said, listen, bro, you're going to be on DH. You're going to be on DH. You like it or not. That's all you can do. You cannot play. You proof off run for last 3 years to put you in the outfield. And I think defense is an important game. We want you happy. Yes, we do want you happy. But also, we want the team better. And the reason we trade, the reason we don't sign Jose Abreu is because you have to play DH. That's it. That's it. The reason we don't sign Jose, because you're going to be the DH, and we're going to move on to first base, and we have to move on. And I hope this kid understand that. I truly understand his point. I do. I truly understand his point. But meanwhile, when you talk about we care about winning, we care about this, you see, that's an easy example. Players always put themselves before, including myself. I play baseball. I include myself. We put themselves before we put the ball club. And that's something people have to deal day in and day out. But I think this ball club is better with him in the DH spot.
They need his bat in the lineup, no doubt about that. At right field, there's still a question. Maybe it's Oscar Colas who answers it. At second base, there's still a question. Nicky Lopez is a guy that they apparently are looking at with the Royals. That's the latest report. And catcher, Ozzie, they still have yet to address that with Yasmani Grandal and another component there. Why is the Sox roster this incomplete this late in the winter?
First of all, you can find a backup catcher everywhere. That's a guy can help you there. They pray to Grandal. I can go out there and at least catch 130 games, at least, plus DH a little bit, maybe a little bit of first base. You know, it depends how he's hitting. The second baseman is the problem of the White Sox for a long, long time. So maybe since Higuchi, they had the problem every year. Every year they put a second baseman in the spot to play. Second baseman is really very important. You know, I'm surprised they don't sign Mendick.
Yeah.
Because I remember Mendick was the best player they have besides Abreu, best player they have for a month last year. All of a sudden, this kid don't get hurt last year. I think the White Sox do a better job last year in the stats. But I think this kid, all of a sudden, he disappeared. And I don't know. I don't know the reason. I don't know if they're going to have the two kids play at second base. You know, we don't know how TA is going to show up. Now I see Yolito change his mechanic. We don't know. The only guy we know is going to be fine. It's Dylan Zeese. Everybody else is a question mark. You know what I mean? I talked to Moncada a little bit about it. I tried to open his mind. And the way he looked at it, it's going to be a big year for him. I got the pleasure to talk to him. They had the guts to tell him exactly what I feel about him. And he agreed with me. It's one thing about it. We're going to see the same Moncada, guys. We're going to see the same guy. No life. Very quiet kid. It's not his fault, but I think he had to be better in what it is. Not just for the White Sox, just for him. You know, for him to enjoy the game. He might really enjoy the game. And it's a lot of question marks. Out of now Hendrick is down. Everybody say, oh, we put this guy, that guy, and that guy. But nobody know how hard it is to be the closer in the game anymore. You know, you have to be type of like him, like Hendrick. You know what I mean? Goofy, lovely, tough guy, forget everything right away, don't blame anybody when he's doing bad. That, you know what I mean? You will miss that spot. I no doubt anybody can say. You save, you are closer all year long. You, by mistake, you will say 25 games, by mistake, maybe 30. And that's the reason I think they're going to miss this kid. But I get back to Jimenez. I said, you know what I mean? You talk to him, second baseman. Hopefully, one of those guys step up and do the right thing in the right field. I think everybody's big in Cola. I don't think Cola is a Gold Glover. I saw a couple of highlights on him. I saw Osney. My son see him a lot in the minor league this year. And he say, Dad, this guy can hit. This kid will hit in the big league. But I don't think he's going to be a Gold Glover outfield. He's not going to be his flying the bases, but at this kid can hit. I say, why not give him the opportunity to see what he can bring to the table and move on? You know what I mean? Sometimes they leave those guys too long in the minor league. when they come to the big league, they it's a little too late. They make a mistake. They cannot send him down. You know, I mean, so many things. But the White Sox got a lot of question mark up there. The biggest is Clevinger stats. What are you going to be? And you know, I mean, I think you have to move on. And thank God they did it now. When spring training is closed, it's not the season's closed, but they have a couple of holes they got to figure out what they're going to do. Maybe they wait for spring training to see who's stepping up and do the job and win the job.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
This is your first time as ending a season as a head coach. What is your process of sitting there and saying, okay, you know, is this working on my staff? Whether it's position coaches or otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing you do is go through the process of exit interviews for the players, you know, so that's a big part of it. And again, we're assessing everything there, like I said, from the training room all the way through the coaches. And then from there, you go, and the next week you do your coaches. You know, you go meet with the position coaches, the coordinators, sit down and talk to them and see where everything is.
Matt Eberflus, coach of your Chicago Bears with the number one overall draft pick, what he does after the regular season ends. Here's what Mike Sando does when the regular season ends and a bunch of guys get fired, and he figures out where would be the best opportunity to go. Joining me on this Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book, is Mike Sando, the aforementioned NFL writer for The Athletic. Mike, thanks for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks.
Your piece, you caught the Sando Pick 6 rating the coaching openings. You did it, and I'd like you to share with the class your work and how you looked at it. So let's play show and tell. What'd you do, and how did it come out?
Okay, so there's the five teams, right? We got Denver, Carolina, Houston, Indy, and Arizona. We're all looking. Carolina has since hired Frank Reich. But I think you look at the ownership and you look at either your quarterback situation or if you're in position to get one, right? And so I thought two teams were kind of pulled to the bottom by their quarterback situations. It was sort of eliminate a little bit Denver and Arizona because you're going to be locked into really expensive contracts with quarterbacks you probably wish you didn't have at this point for various reasons. And the extension for Russell Wilson in Denver hasn't even started, right? It's going to start. So I think that's one of the reasons Denver hasn't had, you know, they were rumored on Sean Payton, all these guys. That hasn't really happened. So I would put Denver and Arizona probably fourth and fifth in that. I think Arizona's franchise history a little bit, the conundrum with Kyler Murray, is, you know, may pull them to the bottom. Okay, so then I would put Carolina or Houston at the top. They're not perfect. I mean, Houston, you get much better draft capital, tons of cap space, but you also go in there probably having to fit with Nick Caserio, the GM, do some things on his terms. Maybe he's going to be involved on game day. Maybe he's going to be involved in your staff a little bit. So that's not for everybody. But if that lines up, that could be the top spot because they got two ones, a two, two threes, a lot of flexibility, a few decent pieces that they got in the draft last season. You could make a case, too, that Carolina maybe – you may like Carolina a little more. I'd put them right on par because I think the GM there and Scott Fitterer, you know, probably really easy to work with. He's not going to force stuff on you. They have good young talent. They played well last season. And they have an extra second-round pick. I don't think that's a huge deal. But a young roster, right, that's probably ready to go. Just find yourself a quarterback. Easier said than done. But you're not locked into Russell Wilson at age 34, hurting your ability to do stuff in the offseason.
My guest is Mike Sando. He writes about the NFL for The Athletic. We're talking about coaching openings. Where would the Bears opening rank if they were looking for a coach now based on the criteria you cited?
So the Bears would probably, I would probably still put them above the Denver and Arizona's. I'd probably put them a tick. Well, it's interesting. If they were open right now with Fields, I guess you'd put them, I don't think I'd put them at the very top, but you'd probably put them above Indy, right? So maybe you'd have Carolina and Houston in there with Chicago. You know, in the upper part.
Okay, the quarterback is so important, and there's much debate about the quarterback, that did he look bad passing because he had no weapons and no line, or can he not? Does he not know what an open receiver in the NFL looks like? And when he played at Ohio State, he had all the time he wanted to get to his third read, he could sit there and finish a homework assignment should he be so moved. So what do you think of Justin Fields?
Yeah, I think that Justin Fields, no matter what, has to have better weaponry, right? I mean, we know that that's true to help him, to give him a chance. I don't think he's by any means a polished passer who's, you know, ready to carry a pass-oriented offense, but he doesn't have to do that because of his other gifts. And so I think you continue to try to develop that part of him. I think if you look at what Philadelphia has done with Jalen Hurts, they started out with him a little bit similar to the Bears, where it took them half of, you know, his first season as a starter to figure out they were going to run the ball and use him more that way. But then the year after that, this past season, they transitioned back into a little bit more, certainly dual threat, but where his passing game expanded. They got him some great weaponry, and he grew as a pocket passer. I don't think it's fair to say that Justin Fields can't do that until you try to coach him through that and get him the weapons. By all accounts, he's got the acumen to do it. I mean, that was one of the things, you know, as far as handling the offense and knowing what he's doing, I think that's probably a strength of his. Now, the instincts of passing and playing in that, you know, that hasn't been seen as something that's as natural for everyone, including him. So that's the area he's got to grow. You have to give him the weapons to find out, and then you have to coach him through that and hope he takes to the coaching and works on all the finer points of the game. I think that's one of the challenges with somebody who kind of flashes onto the scene. Not that they had good team success, but he kind of became a star on a losing team with the way he was able to run and make things happen. And so it can be harder than to feel like you need to work on the littler, finer points of your game to fully develop the passing part, which he has to do. That's up to every individual and the coaching of whether they're going to do that.
My guest is Mike Sando. He writes about the NFL for The Athletic. We're talking Bears football here on The Score. If you were the Bears and you had Justin Fields and a chance to trade him, and you had the number one pick and a chance to trade that, would you choose one over the other? Would you do both? What would you do if you were in the Bears situation?
I think I would stick with Justin Fields. You know, I'm not as far into the draft stuff as I will be in 2 months from now or a month from now, but I don't sense that there's a quarterback that's perfect or Andrew Luck or somebody that you would give up Justin Fields for. Now, if you get an amazing package, I just don't necessarily see that happening. I mean, I see people in mock drafts saying, you know, Bryce Young could go number one. He's 190 pounds. I don't think that's happening, in my opinion. It just takes one team. Maybe someone will do that. But I don't know if that's what you want to do. So, you know, I kind of think there's a decent chance they wind up having that pick. We'll see. Chicago.
There is some talk, there's some belief that the Texans, Nick Caserio, you mentioned, he wants to overmanage, he wants to be Bill Belichick when he grows up, and the Bears need him. Failing Ryan Pace getting the Houston job, which the Bears would love, because then he would overpay for everything the way he did here. Is Nick Caserio likely to do that? Is he likely to obsess? Do the Bears have the opportunity to leverage? Is it a legit idea that Nick Caserio, Chris Ballard would be involved in some kind of battle to see who gets the Bears pick?
I think that's unrealistic.
Why?
So Caserio comes from New England, where they don't really put any individual over the team, right? Mm-hmm. It's a team concept. They don't do that. Chris Ballard has also been, I think, a little bit on the conservative side. I mean, they have sit on the sideline of free agency, don't overextend, don't make the big mistake. Obviously, their quarterback situation has become dire, and there's pressure on them to get somebody. But I just can't imagine. Unless, I just don't think that there's that quarterback in this draft that you have to have and you're going to mortgage everything to go up to one. Just don't see it. So, no, I don't think those teams fit the profile to do it for those reasons.
If you were the Bears and you had the number one pick, I know you get into draft stuff later, but what would you, based on what you've seen from the Bears this year, you can't go wrong picking any position. What do you think? Who do you think? Who's your early leader? I won't hold you to this, but who's your early leader as number one for that team?
And I don't even know. I have no idea. But here's what I would want for them. I want to get nastier up front. There's a few teams up, there's a few teams picking high that need to do this. Seattle's another one who's up there somewhere in the top five, six or somewhere in there. I think they definitely need to get something up front on defense. Obviously, they made trades from their front seven last year, and they were pushed around. So that's one. That's probably where I would lean if there's somebody that's a real difference maker there, right? And we've seen Detroit took Aiden Hutchinson. That's working out well for them. I think the Jaguars are happy with Walker, who they took early, you know, and helped them in the playoffs. They got to get that. Now, obviously, they need weaponry, too, but I don't know the, I don't know if there's someone for the number one pick that I would do over, you know, just a big, tough, physical piece for Matt Eberflus's defense.
Well, I'm all about Carter. I'm all about a three technique who's going to be there. We want to see the second coming of Tommy Harris, some version of that, however you get there. Somebody's Warren Sapp, Tommy Harris, get somebody who's just going to run up the middle and behead people. We vote for that here. That's what I do anyway.
Some tough Bear football. You know, we, that defense, that's hard to watch, especially in Chicago.
Tell us about it. We're talking with Mike Sando of The Athletic. He writes about the NFL. And the Sando pick six was rating the coaching openings, and we went through that with the different versions of it, left tackle, wide receiver, rusher, cornerback, so the other key positions. And the teams that are in the final four have filled those in different ways, and we could end up with the Super Bowl. I think the road teams are going to win tomorrow. I think we're going to end up with the Super Bowl. Maybe I'm just a sucker for a storyline where the number one overall pick faces Mr. Irrelevant in the Super Bowl. You know, writers like that. I'm a fan of that. I love that whole storyline. So let's start with the NFC game, 49ers and Eagles. The Eagles have certainly been a topic of conversation here because we want Jalen, you know, Justin Fields to grow up to be Jalen Hurts. How do you see that game? How are you picking? How are you scouting that game?
I'm kind of with you that I think one of the road teams will win. I do side with Philadelphia a little bit in this matchup. I think they're a little bit better up front on both sides. And, you know, we'll see. We've been waiting for somebody to force more of it to be on Brock Purdy's shoulders, and that hasn't really happened yet. They've played great around him. They have great talent. My fear for Philly is probably that I think the 49ers actually – hits from the linebacker position, unlike to a level that a lot of teams don't. And so I think Jalen Hurts, with some of, he obviously got hurt in the Chicago game, you know, could take a couple big shots in this game. I'm waiting to see that, but I do think that the Eagles probably have a little bit more talent up front, and then may be able to get some things down the field on the perimeter in the passing game. But I love the 49ers, too, and they've won, what, 12 in a row? Is it 12 in a row now?
This is not the team that lost to the Bears. This is in the week one. This is not that team.
Yeah. No, they're good. So I do think they're dangerous. I see where you're coming from on it. I mean, I don't feel overly strong on taking the Eagles, but, you know, I think it'll be a good game. I just lean a little bit that way, but anxious to see it play out.
Bengals, Chiefs?
My fear in picking the Bengals is that Mahomes is just setting us all up. You know, I think Mahomes is spectacular. I think he thrives on the doubts. And can he do it with the injury? He made amazing plays even after the injury last week, throwing it off of one leg. I just feel like the Bengals might be a little more well-rounded, and that they, if Mahomes is just loses 10% or 15% of his superpowers of moving around, that over the course of a 60 or 70 play game, that could be enough for the Bengals. I do think the Bengals are the better team on defense. I think just like the Chiefs, they can control the ball on offense. The Bengals have done a great job closing out games, you know, holding the ball for the final possession, all of that. They can mitigate their pass protection issues a little bit because they're so precise in the short passing game. So that's kind of what I see is probably the Bengals, but I'm so glad I don't have to bet money on it because I would have a very hard time betting against Mahomes. Can't you just see him at the end of the game with that smile on his face?
Yeah,
I can imagine that on the field. Right. I can just picture that.
Not even with somebody else's money, Mike.
Yeah, so I don't know. How do you see that one? Are you leaning towards?
I'm a sucker for storylines, so I love the Bengals.
Yeah.
I love the giant killer that Joe is. That's the way he's. I love that whole storyline. So I appreciate
you
joining.
He's a giant himself. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I love talking with you. Thanks for joining me. Hopefully we can catch up with you later as we get closer to the draft.
Yep. I hope so. Okay. We'll see you.
Mike Sando of The Athletic. And I'll close out Saturday. Suckage. We broadcasted the football games I just talked with Mike about. 1 o'clock tomorrow, we will bring you the NFC Championship game. 5:30, the AFC Championship game. We'll bring you Bulls Magic at 5:45 tonight on The Score, Chuck's pregame show. And then Bulls and Magic. DePaul and Marquette will follow this here Saturday Suckage radio show. And
again, onions! Baby onions!
Tomorrow, Danny Parker's The Playoff Show, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on The Score. And then we'll bring you football, the NFL, the Super Bowl teams will be known tomorrow. And it starts here on The Score at 1 p.m. Suckageers, Wake and Bake Club members, thank you for listening. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It wouldn't have been possible if we weren't here to be told how much we suck. So, kudos to you guys for sucking as bad as we do.
Oh, yes. Wait a minute, Mr. Postman.
Wait.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.